I gave a talk, a very short talk on Wednesday morning, and someone there asked me if I would give it again. And so I thought I would try to give it again. Since I don't have any notes, it's a little bit hard. But I'd like to give it again. And it has to do with problems. I imagine that a few of you have problems. And those of you who don't can go home now. It's pretty common for human beings to have problems, and of all kinds. And they can be the most mundane problems imaginable. They can be, you have a problem with, I don't know if it's most mundane, but you can have a problem with your plumbing in your house. And so you have to solve the problem. When something's a problem, it means it requires someone to solve the situation, to engage in it, to repair, to fix, to make amends, to do something about the situation. A problem is something that asks for attention and wants some kind of care. So it could be the plumbing. And so it could be we have a problem with the water dripping into our living room floor. And so that has to be attended to. So we call a plumber or we fix it ourselves. We have problems with our cars. And so we have to get, you know, it could be as simple as needing the oil changed. I have this problem, you know, I have to find the time to get my oil changed. Where am I going to find that time? So you have to think about and solve that problem. There could be problems with interpersonal relationships. I have this problem with this person. That person has a problem with me, we say. And so we might feel like we have to somehow come to terms with that. Either talk to the person and work it out, change ourselves, or maybe the solution to the problem is just to ignore the problem. And that's certainly a solution, some people think. One of my favorite Peanuts cartoons is Linus is talking to Charlie Brown. And Charlie's talking to Linus, and Charlie says, "Oh, so you think my father doesn't know how to take care of things? Well, just the other day, we were driving in our car, and it started making this terrible noise." And so Linus says, "Oh, don't tell me." He pulled over, stopped, and fixed the problem. And Charlie says, "Oh, no, he just turned the radio up louder." So that's kind of a solution, I suppose. But normally, that's not a very healthy solution. But it's some kind of way of addressing the problem. Then some people have problems with the world and what's happening out there with politics or wars or all kinds of things. And it's a problem. And so we feel we have to address it. And we have to get involved in. And some people do get involved in many ways. And then there's problems with ourselves. And some people have just teeny problems with themselves. And some people have big problems with themselves. And so people feel I have to fix myself. I have to somehow address and solve the problem I have with myself. I have a temper, or I'm depressed, or I'm just not very kind, or I don't have right speech, or I'm just too intimidated to do anything. I'm always afraid. And so some people will go to therapy. Some people will do workshops. Some people will have other ways of working on themselves. Some people will come to meditation. Meditation is a solution to their personal problems. And so they feel somehow what's going on in meditation will help them. And it can be said, perhaps, that human life is one continual problem. You know, it's the problems all the time, always kind of addressing problems. And I'm kind of amazed at home how ongoing my problems are. I mean, before I had children, we would do laundry, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks, and we would almost never sweep the kitchen floor. You know. And now, I'm sweeping a few times a day, and laundry's every day now. I don't understand what's happened. And dishes, I mean, the amount of time I spend in front of the sink washing dishes is just phenomenal. And or picking up after cleaning the rooms, cleaning the living room, all these toys and cleaning, and you know. And the idea that you're going to do something to finish it, that you're going to have this cleaning project and you're going to finish it once and for all, finish the problem's going to be done with, at least done for 24 hours. I mean, that idea of that kind of problem is, you know, I've discovered a new kind of problem. Problems that go on and on. They don't stop. You know, so at some point you have to stop, because if you don't stop, you know, you'll get exhausted. So you say, okay, I've dealt with enough dishes now, enough laundry, enough whatever for now, and I'll come back to it later. So part of life, wise life, is learning how to relate to our problems. And one way of relating to problems is to realize that everyone has problems of some sort. Problems in the sense of something that needs our attention, something needs to be solved. And that there's wise ways and unwise ways of engaging with our problems. When I wash endless dishes, I had this problem with cleaning the house and all that. I could be upset about it and frustrated and, you know, be neurotic about trying to get it all done. Or I could just do one toy at a time or one dish at a time and enter that world of that dish. Me and the dish were just kind of buddies for that time. And just enter into it as if there doesn't need to be an end. And not to measure the activity by trying to finish it or get it or accomplish something, get anywhere. And just to do it right then and there. And that's one approach that can be quite helpful. Another approach is to... well, there's many things. I mean, many of you have probably figured out how to work with your problems to some degree. You wouldn't have arrived here today if you hadn't had some success at working with your problems and managing to get here. But the point of the talk today is not about the problems you can fix. The point about today's talk I want to make is what about those problems that you can't fix, that you can't do anything about? What about situations come in our life where something happens that doesn't seem to be right, doesn't feel appropriate, feels like it's a problem, it's a mistake, and it cannot be fixed? What then? And so what are some of those things that can happen that are like that? There can be health problems. And some health problems can be fixed and worked with, and then some health problems cannot be fixed. That's it. And some people have problems with aging. And people will spend a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort to try to somehow avoid the problems that come with aging. But can aging be, you know, it's not going to go away. You know, as long as you're alive. So it's one of those kind of problems that just kind of, for most people, kind of, you know, if it's seen as a problem, it gets worse and worse. And then there's a problem with dying. You know, sooner or later, I believe most of us are going to die. And there's a variety of ways of dying. But sooner or later, and some people will have a problem with it. And some people, it's a wonderful moment in some people's dying process when they no longer see it as a problem. And I've known people that have been present for them as they're going through their process. And a tremendous level of peace and love can arise when they kind of, in a sense, surrender or accept or give up, or really accept this is what's happening. And they're no longer fighting it or afraid of it, not seeing it as a problem. A friend of mine was a hospice nurse, and she said sometimes in caring for people in hospice, she would tell the family members at a certain point, she'd say, from this point on, there are no more crises. And that would help the family often not to get anxious when things happen. It's no longer a crisis, not something to rush around and call 911 and kind of try to do something about. From now on, it's just, you know, it's not a problem anymore. It's just what's going to happen, just what's happening. Some people have problems with their personalities and or their character or inner thing that just doesn't seem to go away. You know, some people have done 20 years of therapy, spent a small fortune in trying to fix themselves and self-improve themselves. And it seems like certain kind of character traits just stay there and stay there and stay there. And it doesn't seem to go away. And at some point, you know, just you come to the conclusion, I don't think I can fix this. This is what's happening. Or people come to meditation with a problem. And that's using meditation or Buddhist practice or spiritual practice as an attempt to try to solve something, some problem. And they realize after a while, it's not going to work. They can't fix it. They can't solve it. So what happens when there's a problem that cannot be fixed? And the suggestion here today is that there's an opportunity there that is that's often not there when we can fix something and solve a problem. And that opportunity is varied, and a lot of opportunities. One opportunity is to discover a capacity for acceptance or peace or not being in conflict or a sense of equanimity about how things are. As long as we think we can fix things, or we can fix things, and we often should fix things, but sometimes when we can't fix something, it challenges us to look, where is the clinging, where is the resistance, where are the belief systems we have that somehow make us anxious in having this problem there? And can we kind of turn the attention around from the problem, in a sense, to our inner life and find out what is it that has a change in here so that I'm at peace with the situation? What is it? What changes? What has to happen here? And sometimes we're not willing to turn the attention around and look at ourselves as long as the world out there can be fixed and changed. And so there's a tremendous teaching in having problems that can't be fixed. And for some people, they're not going to look at themselves in a very deep, engaging, serious way until they come up against a wall where it's hopeless. There's no possibility of doing anything about this situation. And I've known people, and maybe you are some of those people, who have had some kind of problem that no one would ever wish on you, and sometimes health situations. Some people have become invalid in some way or disabled in some way. And I've had people tell me that they've been very grateful for the disability. They hated it. It was caused tremendous anguish and problems initially. But they realized they had to kind of let go of a certain level of self-image that they were living by that wasn't really serving them very well. But as long as they stayed healthy, they can live in this kind of fiction or live in a superficial way. But once the disability set in, that wasn't available anymore. And they had to kind of find a very different way of feeling a well-being, feeling peace that wasn't dependent on status, wasn't dependent on money, it wasn't dependent on being competent in a certain way, or all kinds of things. Wasn't dependent on good looks, wasn't dependent on all the things that we think our well-being is dependent on. So when the rug gets pulled out from underneath us, we could either get depressed or fight against the impossible, or take that turn around, that 180-degree turn, and look, what has to happen here inside of me to find peace with this situation? One of the opportunities in problems which cannot be solved is that we can discover compassion. And I think compassion is a good attitude, a good approach to life, to assume that compassion is in short supply. And whatever we can do to cultivate compassion in ourselves is really needed for the world that we live in. And one of the ways of discovering compassion is to be up against our own limitations. And then you see our own limitations as a wellspring for feeling compassion. This is what it's like to be a human being. We join the club of people who have personal problems. Join the club of people who have failings. Join the club of people who suffer. And to feel that, this is what it's like to be a human being. And rather than be burdened by that, to let the sense of empathy, of sympathy, of compassion, of care, of kindness arise out of that. Not to hold ourselves by some kind of unrealistic standard of how we should be, but rather, there's suffering here. And that this suffering deserves kindness, care, attention. Part of the opportunity of an unsolvable problem is to look at our beliefs, our assumptions about life, what a successful life is, what a necessary life is, beliefs about what it means to be a human being, and to have those challenged. And it's very hard for us to get our beliefs challenged deeply enough. Many beliefs we carry around with us, we don't even know we have them. And sometimes it takes a huge problem to really be up against, to have that mirror that looks back and looks at the very root of our beliefs, what we think is really important. So it's sometimes said that spiritual life, I don't know if I agree with this statement, but I want to say it anyway. But spiritual life begins when we have a problem that can't be solved. And many of you probably know something about recovery in AA, where there's a kind of very strong sentiment like that, that you realize that you cannot take care of your problems by yourself, and you have to kind of turn yourself over to a higher power. In Buddhism, perhaps we talk about turning ourselves over to truth. Let the truth take care of this. I can't take care of this anymore, but let's see if the truth can take care of it. Let me trust the truth. And there are many situations I find myself in where I don't know the answer or the solution. Sometimes as a teacher, I meet people with tremendous difficulties and problems, and I don't know really how to counsel them and how to be with them in terms of solving the problem. But in a situation where I don't know what the solution is, my faith is to trust the truth, trust the mindfulness, the presence that's there, and then try to meet what's happening with as much honesty and truth as possible. And that truth is kind of like the higher power, the other power that supports. It lets something else happen and move through. And truth is kind of like, you know, kind of like water going downhill, finding the route. Sometimes the truth requires the water of attention to go back into us, that mirror, that turning 180 degrees around. Oh, that's where the resistance is. That's where the issue is here. So one of the ways that mindfulness meditation is taught, there's many ways, many contexts of ways of teaching mindfulness meditation, and some are more directed in the sense of using mindfulness to get something, to do something, to solve a problem. And another way is you don't use mindfulness to try to solve anything at all, even if you can. But rather use mindfulness to just simply notice what is. And as you try to notice what is, you might feel the inner rebellion, the inner motivations to try to fix the difficulty that's going on, the situation, or try to improve on what's going on. But when you don't try to, when you use mindfulness, when the standard for mindfulness is not trying to fix anything, then you kind of find yourself in that same place where you have a problem which can't be fixed. But you've chosen not to fix it, to receive some of the advantages that it takes of looking more deeply at what's going on and looking at the opportunity of finding a peace regardless of what is happening. But if we always think that meditation is about solving and fixing and getting something, huffing and puffing and getting concentrated, it's possible to get concentrated, but there's also a lost opportunity. And I've known people who've had relatively good success in getting into meditative states, and it hasn't always served them very well. And it's only when, you know, they'll go a certain length in their meditation, but sooner or later in meditation practice, you come to a situation where you realize that your efforts are not going to work, not going to help anymore. And some people have to wait a long time before they get to that point. And some people, it starts the first day. But I can't do anything here anymore except just be present, just show up. Just notice what's happening. I can't fix the situation. Let me turn it over to truth. Let me turn it over to mindfulness. And just be present, see what happens. So one way of doing mindfulness is to just sit upright, stable, present, as mindful as we can, and not try to accomplish anything, beyond just noticing what is. And in the process of doing that, finding a new way of being present for what is. That maybe it's very different than if we're in the kind of the technique-oriented way of fixing things and making something happen. So sooner or later, I believe, most people will have a problem that can't be fixed. And then how do we relate to that problem? And one of the things I'd like to suggest is that a problem is, by definition, something that requires to be solved. And if it cannot be solved, you no longer have a problem. So I hope that many of you don't have any problems. I hope you have the kind of non-problems that can enlighten you, can free you, and you see it as a possibility of the possibility of freedom, and the possibility of compassion in having these non-problems. So those are my thoughts for this morning. Do you have any thoughts now? Comments or questions or testimonials about the benefits of having problems? Over here, please. If you don't, please use the mic so that people who have hearing assisting devices can hear.
So often when we first find out that... Is this working? Okay. So often when you first realize that you have a problem that can't be solved, the initial reaction is despair. And you talked about moving 180 degrees to acceptance. Can you talk a little bit about that process and how you do it?
Well, there's a variety of ways. So I don't know if there's one way. One way that I've encountered is just being so exhausted from trying to to fight and just like finally give up. And sometimes, you know, the only way up is down. The only way is to reach rock bottom. And I know sometimes in my own meditation practice or in some retreats, I've only been able to go forward, in a sense, when I reach rock bottom. And I've wondered about that as a teacher, because people come to me on retreat and ask, they come with their problems and difficulties, and they're expecting me to give them solutions and help them and guide them. And it seems like the right thing to do. I mean, I want to help them, so I try to offer suggestions and ideas. But some occasionally I look at the, you know, I think I may be doing this person a disservice, giving them things to do and suggestions. I think this person just needs to rock bottom out. And only when they bottom out and give up, that's when they're going to give up completely. And that's when the practice is really going to begin. So that's one way, getting exhausted or just kind of pushing it to the limit, right? And that's not so pretty. Another way is to turn the attention around and then studying what is. It's always studying what is. So rather than thinking that you have to kind of force yourself into acceptance, I'm supposed to be equanimous here, you know, just it's a lot of just turn around and study, what is this despair about? What am I despairing? What's the source of the despair? What are the feelings? What's it like emotionally? What's it like physically? What's it like cognitively? What are the beliefs around despair? Is there fear? Is there anger? Is there a belief that certain things have to be a certain way? Is there a belief that if this continues one more day, then tomorrow is going to be impossible? You know, what's the beliefs around that? And then also when turning the attention around and looking at ourselves, sometimes it's useful to ask, you know, do I have resources, other things I can trust and rely on? Rather than what I'm relying on when I'm in despair. Despair has something that supports it. You may find a different support. Perhaps it's your good heart. I think, you know, my mind can't figure this out. My mind is, you know, screaming. But maybe I can drop into my heart. What happens if I encounter this situation through my heart rather than through my mind? Or perhaps it's some notion of being inspired by the truth, or by mindfulness, or by Buddha nature. Or perhaps you have some kind of other spiritual source of inspiration. And what is it like to kind of fall back and rely on that? And sometimes just a matter of remembering it, you have another resource. And sometimes you can call on that. That sometimes works, and a person can relax. So those are some of my ideas. Your question is really good. Maybe some of the people here would like to offer some other ideas. Audrey.
Many years ago in S training, which some of us may have had.
Well, that's why you don't get to pee, right?
you
have this problem, and they keep the doors locked, you know. So
you don't drink anything.
So we don't do that here. But.
One of the solutions to what we're talking about in problems was to choose it. And that's an interesting opening to either accepting or looking at it, but without all the resistance to it. And that's been helpful.
And nice, so choosing the problem. And so I've noticed that for myself at different times and also in other people, there are a lot of different attitudes we have about having a problem. And sometimes it's useful to look at the common default attitudes that arise about our problems. Some people are burdened by problems, and some people are inspired by them. There's a woman I've been told about who teaches conflict resolution. And people who have been around her say they're so inspired by her because whenever she hears about a conflict, she gets happy. Oh, great, there's such a great opportunity here. And she kind of throws herself in. And most people are, you know. And so, you know, to choose or to feel like you're choosing, oh, great, there's an see the opportunity rather than seeing it as a burden. Right behind you, Bill.
When I was a relatively young man just out of high school, I would have a problem of some kinds, and I'd go into an absolute panic. If I didn't have a solution, I'd go into an absolute panic. And somehow, fairly early on, I figured out that the only solution to most things was time. If you just said, okay, I can't deal with this, and took a deep breath and went on with your life, that almost, well, so far, at every point in my life, when I've come up against any of these problems, they just dissolve. It's like they're vacuous and they just go away.
Yeah, many times that's the case. It was, I think it was Mark Twain who said, someone said, "Let me. I've had many problems in my life, most of which never existed." What? Churchill? Churchill. Oh, he had a lot of problems. It's Mark Twain? Who knows? Anyway, it's true for most people. There's a certain percentage of our problems which are imaginary, or there's an imaginary component part. The problems.
Well, I found it to be even true of the ones which are real. If there's a real problem and you can't deal with it, if you just give it time and space, it ceases to exist at least in the intensity that you were feeling it at the moment that it was there. Mm-hmm. That real hard issue problems dissolve with time.
Thank you. Andrea.
So I had a situation early in my practice, really how I got into the practice very much, where it was one of those problems that couldn't be solved. And over time, in working with this, over years of actually working with it, what I discovered for myself was that when the problem would arise very much as a manifestation of it was anger. And as the anger arose, what happened is I just got pulled into it. I got completely sucked into it. The thoughts started running around. And I realized that it was not so easy to actually be present for the anger. The problem itself was not easy to turn the attention to. And what I discovered for myself, actually, was not ignoring it. I mean, it was ignoring it, but it wasn't repressing it. But instead, turning my attention to something really neutral. So when the anger arose, if I was sitting at my desk, I would turn my attention to my butt on the chair. If I was walking, I would turn my attention to the sensations of my feet on the ground. just something else that was happening in the present moment that was far away from the kind of physical manifestation in the body, you know, the feeling in the core of the body. And to me, that was really, really helpful. And it had to be a really skillful way of saying, not now, to the anger. You know, it couldn't be, I hate you, anger, go away, I'm not going to pay attention to you. It really had to be a recognition, oh, the mindfulness isn't strong enough to deal with this, to meet this anger. So not now. Someday, when mindfulness is stronger, I will look directly at the anger. But now I'm not able to do that, so I'm going to take my attention to something else. And that was extremely powerful for me.
I'd like to add to that a little bit, because the same type of approach worked for me dealing with physical pain. I had chronic pain most of my life, and using mindfulness, I would sit there and pay attention to the pain and describe it and just hang out with it until I'd be exhausted. And, you know, have these really grim sitting meditations, you know, focused on pain. And finally, you know, a teacher gave me the suggestion to that isn't the only thing happening in the present moment. There are other sensations, even though that one was really strong. And I started focusing on a small pleasant sensation in the body. And that really transformed my practice. You know, it went from this grim thing that I was doing, which was good for me, to something where I could really pay attention to what was really going on inside me. And it just gave me a lot of spaciousness because I could focus on other things. And I still dip into pain and pay attention when I need it. It lets me know when I should move and when I'm doing something unskillful. And there are times when it's still very useful, but I definitely have a lot more options now.
I've had problems which certainly problems where I get kind of pulled into the world of the problem, and I don't even notice the world that I'm in. And then to wake up from that and realize, wait a minute, right now, here and now, there's no problem. You know, the trees are there, the beautiful green of the tree, the blue sky, you know, the room, everything's, you know. Actually, it's actually pretty good in the moment right now. And that kind of shifts the perspective sometimes. Oh, right now. So my problem is it might be a real problem, but it's not present. It's living in the present moment through my thoughts, my ideas, my imagination. And that kind of lightens it up, can lighten it up quite a bit. For me, and sometimes, and then you know maybe later you take care of it, or maybe it doesn't happen later, or whatever. I remember a Calvin Hobbes cartoon where Calvin is up climbing a tree and telling Hobbes about the wonderful merits of being in the present moment. Just how wonderful it is to be in the present moment and just living here and now and no problems. And then Hobbes says, yes, but at this moment you're supposed to be at school. So if you have a problem with your taxes this next week, it's probably not the time to just kind of live in the present moment, you know, as if, you know, taxes are something, you know, conceptual, distant, and you can do that after the 15th. So anyway, oh yes, please, last one.
So a couple of things. I've been in AA since the middle of December, and there's a couple of things that are really pertinent to this, which is one of the things, you know, how do you get patience? You wait for it. And that's pretty good. And, The other thing that I think was really helpful for me early on is so that, you know, of the 12 steps, you only have to perfect the first step, which is the surrender step and the admitting that there is a problem. And that I think for me, I have tried to, during the years that led me up to that, I was still trying to, I fancied myself as one of those drunken Buddhas, you know, and that, you know, that this, everything was tying together, and there was, since there was no self, then, you know, there's no need to be disciplined either. That was fun, you know. College and the decade after, that was all a good time. But it really wasn't. But it's no coincidence that once I finally did hit rock bottom and went and surrendered and asked for help, that suddenly, you know, I was sitting regularly again, and I found this place, and my life has really turned around in so many ways. The problem's not gone, except that it's not a problem. It's you know, I think, and The Simpsons, when they said that Lisa tells Homer, you know, Dad, the Chinese have the same word for crisis and as opportunity. He said, oh, yeah, crisitunity. So I think about crisitunity a lot. And I think about when you have milestones in the AA program, it's referred to as a birthday. And, you know, kind of every day is a birthday. And that's sort of how it is felt once I became grateful. Grateful in recovery. And so the problem has been actually the greatest teacher.
Mm. Oh, beautiful. Thank you. It's a very nice way of ending. Thank you very much for listening so attentively. Maybe this was relevant for a few of you.